Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Zach Wilson, quarterback, BYU.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to the Turn of the Jets podcast. I'm your host, Will Parkinson, at WillPa11 on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. Joined by a special guest today, someone that's a in their second appearance in the show. And, you know, we've gotten to actually catch up a couple of times in person now. So this should be pretty fun. Director of content at PFF, tailgate pod host, got a really awesome, an awesome stuff with the Hutch podcast coming out April 20, you know, this month, actually. Austin Gale. Austin, how are you doing today?
Doing great. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm excited, man. It's, you know, it's a crazy time. We're kind of just talking about how insane this month is about to be, this next 24, 25 days. Guess we'll start here. Obviously free agency's, you know, in that lull now. It's going to be all kind of focused in the draft. You know, there'll be that little blip right before training camp where some vets sign, but most of the big names obviously off the board. Jets were pretty active. I wouldn't say the Jets were that biggest spend. They were not Jaguars level spenders or, you know, big name hunting outside of the Chandler Jones stuff, which obviously ends up in Vegas. Made a bunch of signings, a bunch of depth slash, you know, starter level signings. What were your overall kind of feelings on some of the guys the Jets added, you know, a Tomlinson, Whitehead, guys like that?
Yeah, I think it's obvious that the Jets and Douglas were trying to get aggressive in free agency, right? They're in on the Tyreek Hill trade. They tried to make a play for Chandler Jones. Like, they were heavily a part of making some big swings of the bat this offseason. Obviously fell short in a handful of those moves, but I think that does speak to the mentality that they're in, and they want to aggressively improve this team as they continue to develop Zach Wilson in this window of opportunity that is his rookie contract, right? And I think ultimately they didn't get the opportunities they wanted probably, and instead of, you know, doubling down and maybe spending that same money elsewhere, or maybe lower tier players, I think they've kind of stayed pat and added, you know, average to above average talents to kind of lift the floor of this team. I think Laken Tomlinson, that deal is a solid deal, right? He comes in as a starter. I think he's an upgrade for them. It gives you a really, you know, it adds to the floor, boosts the floor of your offensive line. I also really like re-signing Braxton Berrios. I'm surprised he came for that cheap. I thought he'd draw a prettier penny, but still getting Braxton Berrios back, I think, is good. DJ Reed is someone that I know a lot of people really do like at outside corner. I think that was an impressive deal to get him at just $11 million per. I think it's an above average deal for the New York Jets. And even getting Jordan Whitehead as well, I think that's another win, raising the floor of that defense. I think overall, a lot of the moves they made are very opposite to another team that's trying to aggressively improve a team with a quarterback on a contract, and that's the Jacksonville Jaguars, right? I think they could have easily entered this offseason with as much cap space or close to as much cap space as the Jags and overspent on Christian Kirk, right? Overspend on Brandon Scherff, overspend on Foye Luikin. Instead, they kind of hit these average to above average deals to kind of raise the floor of their team, but not necessarily get significant like high end ceiling upgrades at any one position. Where now this is a team that's loaded with draft capital, two top 10 picks and a lot of picks beyond that. Like, this is a team that should focus all their efforts into the draft and adding players at high value positions where they feel like they can get significant improvement, right? I think one of the offensive tackles at four overall, or maybe Ahmad Gardner at four overall, the cornerback out of Cincinnati, is definitely an option. And then at 10, you're probably starting to think receiver, right? Whether that's Drake London of USC, Chris Olave, Ohio State, Jameson Williams, Garrett Wilson, all of those guys kind of come to name there. I think I really like for the 4 and 10 pick for them to lean offense, just because this team needs to, again, support Zach Wilson, I think going Ikem Ekwonu at four or Evan Neal at four and then adding a receiver at 10 is probably their one of their best case scenarios. Now, I think they can go a lot of ways, right? Having two top 10 picks, they should come out of that top 10 with two high-end players at valuable positions.
Yeah, it's interesting. There's a lot here. The Jets roster is truthfully been so bad for a long time. And as well, as much as there's the excitement around, you know, the class last year of Elijah Moore, Elijah Vera Tucker, both Michael Carters and all these different guys that really, like, I thought gave this team some hope. And obviously, you know, Solid, Douglas, and these guys that are well renowned around the league. But you do need to stack together good off seasons. It's not, you can't fix things in a day. One thing I wanted to kind of get into before we get to kind of picks 4 and 10, but it kind of revolves around that, is somebody that covers the draft and obviously covers everything, but covers the draft. And there's this philosophy for some reason going around that right now that you can only, like, you either have to always build through the draft or like you're a free agency and trade team. Like, why do you think people are so much that build through the draft is like the right way to do it? Is like, do you believe that? Or do you think it's just an easy way of being like, we don't want to put the risk of, you know, of putting ourselves out there with some proven veterans?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's smart to build through the draft because I think it gives you an opportunity to build cheaply and build people into your system. I think everyone wants to build through the draft because you don't have to spend a lot of money to build through the draft, right? You don't have to take as wild of risks in that, like, when you trade for a Matthew Stafford and sign all these players, and sometimes that situation can bust, right? I think you need to build through the draft so that you can build cheap, highly competitive rosters. I mean, that's so important. It gets even more important when you do have this quarterback right on a second contract or on a third contract, where you start missing on picks, you find yourself in a situation that the Seahawks are in, right? Pay Russell Wilson all this money. They haven't hit on a draft pick in a long time, a high end draft pick that is. And now they're moving on for Russell Wilson for picks because they have to reset and he wants out of that, you know, out of that building. And there was kind of mutual disagreement in how they could move forward. It's very similar to the Detroit Lions. Detroit Lions, they bring in Matthew Stafford, they give him the second contract, and they just can't hit on enough picks to really vault that team forward enough to be a playoff competitive, Super Bowl competitive team. And I think the right answer is both, right? You need to build through the draft. You need to add in free agency to fill needs. And it's the perfect combination that oftentimes takes you the furthest, right? You look at the Cincinnati Bengals, they did both. Joe Burrow, Jamar Chase, T. Higgins, Sam Hubbard, all added through the draft. Then you look at free agency. They have Von Bell coming in, Chidobe Awuzie, Trey Hendrickson. Like, they bring in BJ Hill. Like, I mean, that's not through the free agency, but they trade for him. Like, you have to do both in this situation. I don't think it's either one or the other. I think obviously in media, a lot of the conversations are polarized just to kind of stretch things further. But like, the right answer is, like, you need to hit on your picks and you need to, you know, sign valuable free agents that actually play out their contracts and don't become, you know, contract burdens, right? Because the risks are a Frank Clark situation or a Ezekiel Elliott situation, right? When you get into the contract game, you can find yourself having to cut players that are good but getting overpaid and all that stuff.
Yeah, it's interesting because a lot of, you know, and I get it from a Jets fan perspective, a lot of Jets fans are Knicks fans, and, you know, it's the same thing of like it's that risk of putting yourselves out there when you have that expensive, you know, pricey item and not living up to the expectation. And the Jets have gotten burned in contracts in the past, but part of it was A, the age that they were signing these guys, but B, they weren't hitting on the picks around, you know, Le'Veon Bell wouldn't have been as big of a deal of crashing out at that contract. Mm-hmm. If the roster around him was really good, you can kind of eat that, right? The Chiefs roster is very good. So while the Frank Clark contract is awful, at least the Chiefs can still be competitive with him because they hit on quarterback and these other pieces. You mentioned a few names there, Ikem Ekwonu, Evan Neal at four, Ahmad Sauce Gardner, who, for anyone that has a problem with him saying he's the best player in the draft, or Kayvon Thibodeau or any of these guys, I don't think people understand how hard corner is to play in the NFL. And when you're really good, how like impressive it is. And if you don't have that irrational confidence at edge, at corner, at any position, really, you need to think that way at quarterback. I'm not sure you really can say it, but every other position, like, you should feel like you're the best player on the field. So just wanted to kind of get that out there. But and then you mentioned some names at 10, some of the receivers are definitely guys that I think the Jets could certainly use, as much as I love Elijah Moore. And I think Corey Davis won't be quite as much of a disaster this year. They still have three receivers on the roster that are NFL level players. Do you feel like it's almost four, for example, edge and offensive line feel like the picks, right? You know, two very valuable positions. Joe Douglas loves the trenches, Robert Saleh scheme, the whole thing. They've invested a shit ton of money in offensive line and in defensive line for that matter. Do you feel like it's almost like kind of doubling down on resources, or they're just such big needs the Jets kind of have to they kind of have to figure it out with, you know, up front at four.
I think you can lock into a blue chip player at a premium position at four, and you pick anything else, I think you're missing, right? I think even Ahmad Gardner at four is a bit rich to me, because I know one of Aquanu, Neal, or Thibodeau will be there, right? One of those guys will be there 100%. And like, even Trayvon Walker, you could call blue chip from a athleticism, size, speed combination, right? He's not blue chip from a tape perspective, and maybe you wouldn't put him in that tier, but like any of Thibodeau, Neal, or Aquanu, and you are, that's a win at four, right? You're getting a lot of value on a really good prospect at a high paid position. The highest paid position outside of quarterback is edge. Right after that, it's offensive tackle, right? Like, you're getting valuable positions on rookie contracts. And you could lean edge because you've already invested in the offensive line, but you could also lean an offensive line because you need injury insurance from Mekhi Becton. I think a lot of it comes down to like the internal, like actual support from Mekhi Becton, belief in my Mekhi Becton being like a sustainable player and like actually being healthy long-term, right? Not running into these situations where he's too big to like rehab effectively and all that kind of stuff, which is no slight towards him. It's just like legitimately genetics, you know, it's genetics trying to stay. As Zion, the basketball player or whatever, that guy can struggles to stay healthy because he's so good. The other piece that I think for a 10, that's where you can maybe look at a low. You're not going to get Aquanu or Neal at 10, period. You're not going to get,
if they're there at 10, there's something wrong.
Exactly. You're not going to get, I don't think, Thibodeau at 10. Like, why would you take a Drake London there at 10? Why would you take a Stingley there at 10? I think you have better chances of, you know, the top receiver or the top cornerback in this class being available there at 10. I think taking offensive tackle or edge at four, like, I'm still floored. I would be floored if Thibodeau gets past the Giants at five. Like, I think he's a lock to be a top five player. I'm surprised that he's not more consistently talked about it in that way.
Yeah, no, I'm on the same page here. I think the way it was phrased to me by some coaches around the league was basically, do not believe anyone telling you that Thibodeau's dropping to 10. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it's like, this is not people. The people that are saying a lot of the stuff are people that have a very good track record of being right. So that's why it's a bit confusing. I love Thibodeau's tape. I think if the Jets walked away and somehow, I tweeted this morning, this is not going to happen, but just saying theoretically, if they walked away with one of those top three receivers, one of the top one or two edge or tackles, and a top corner or Linderbaum or someone that's slipping, like, you feel a lot better about this team going forward now, not only next year where they're 5.5 win total or whatever it is, which is like the second or third lowest, you'd feel a lot better about that. You also feel a lot better about going forward. Like, they actually have some guys that like you want to tune into a Jets game on Sunday because you want to watch these guys play. Kind of going in that route, I want to talk just a little bit about receiver. We'll start with the draft and then just a little bit of what's going on around the league. Jameson Williams is a guy. There's, you know, Chris Sims had his rankings come out. They were interesting. I actually thought Chris did a really good job of talking through why he believed in them. So I'm not giving him a hard time because he's been right a lot more times than most people. And they were just interesting. I thought it was a couple guys that were a little rich for me, Alec Pierce being one. And you've talked about it with Mike on the pod. Mm-hmm. I thought he was a ghost at the Senior Bowl. And I just have a really hard time with guys that are, they're more athletic in shorts than they are on tape. I just didn't see this 4.3 guy that jumps 50 inches and has like this elite level athleticism. I just didn't see it.
Yeah.
Jameson Williams, Drake London. Drake London's pro day's pushback. Jameson Williams coming off the ACL, but you know, both guys should be fine. And then you've got the two Ohio State kids, as you mentioned. You know, you could make an argument for some other guys as well if you really want to. Who do you think's the best fit? I know you've talked a little bit about this, but who do you feel like is the best fit just for this roster, for Zach Wilson? Like, who's going to have him take that next step?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, I think London is my top receiver in this class. And I think it fits a skill set that the Jets don't currently have, right? I think you have Elijah Moore there as the speed guy that can do a lot of the vertical stuff that you want and get down the football field. Whereas London, I think, is going to win and eat at the next level at the short intermediate levels of the field, right? Could be from the slot. Like, I really like his role being very similar to how Michael Thomas is leveraged in the NFL. Like, Michael Thomas plays, I think, 60% of his reps from the slot, right? Everyone sees him as this big body receiver that, you know, wins in these contested catch situations, but he doesn't have like the suddenness and the speed to be like a vertical post comeback corner, you know, street kind of guy. He's more like working from the slot, run the slants, all that stuff, run the underneath stuff and win after the catch. Like, Michael Thomas is phenomenal after the catch. So is Drake London. That's where I really do feel like the Mike Evans comparisons fall flat. Like, Mike Evans is just simply not good after the catch, and he's not used that way, right? Mike Evans is used down the field, vertical threat, big strides. London, I don't think you want to lean on him as a vertical threat in the NFL. He needs to be a short intermediate area. 46% of his career receptions have been made within 9 yards of the line of scrimmage. Like, he eats at the short intermediate levels of the football field. He's not a guy that's going to consistently create separation or win like the downfield routes. And you don't have to be successful in the NFL, right? It's like, those are the valuable routes. And that's what Jameson Williams will do. That's what Chris Olave will do down the field. But I think Drake London, eat at the intermediate areas of the field, be this like consistent weapon for Zach Wilson when he isn't looking to uncork it deep, and then lean on some of the other speed guys that you have to get down the field and win the vertical routes.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think Twitter has ruined Michael Thomas. Is like, I mean, he's ruined himself a little bit the last 12 months of like what he's done. And, you know, I'm not going to get into that now, but the dude set the NFL record for receptions on a NFC like title contending team. And it's not like, you know, he got fed targets, but he was a very good football player. He still is a very good football player. We'll see what happens this year, obviously. But yeah, the Mike Evans stuff is, I know Mike talked about this a little bit about, you know, him being more similar to like a Brandon Marshall, where with the ball in his hands, I mean, obviously he doesn't have that similar body in terms of like actual like bulkiness, but yeah, I don't think like we talk about separation. He's always open and always his separation. It's just, he's not going to be somebody that 25 yards down the field, you're like looking for, you know, and again, Keaton Slovis has the weakest arm I've ever seen. And as a USC fan, I can attest it. He ruined a lot of stuff, but at the same time, yeah, he's not going to be Jameson Williams. He's the one other guy I kind of want to talk about a little bit about. Jameson Williams is a guy that, I mean, I'm not sure how much better you could ask for a guy to play this year. He just, you know, the suddenness and the double moves and pretty much not losing any speed and all these different things. He feels like the one vertical guy in this class for the Jets that fits kind of the West. He kind of fits any scheme, obviously, but you can kind of move him around. The one concern I would have, and I'm curious if you feel this way, I know he's 175 pounds, 178 pounds. It feels like when he gets pressed or he gets kind of bumped off the line of scrimmage, that's the one place where you kind of can see him get tripped up a little bit. Would you be concerned about that at all? Or you think like offensive coordinators will figure out a way to get the ball in his hands no matter what?
No, I'm not concerned about that at all. Honestly, I think he's, you know, arguably a better prospect than when Ruggs was coming out. Right. I think not even arguably, I think he is a better prospect than when Ruggs was coming out. I think he'd be my wide receiver one and more of the consensus wide receiver one if he didn't get hurt so late in the season. Like Drake London obviously got hurt. Broken ankles, I think, are different, but like him getting hurt that late in the season, which could like jeopardize his offseason and could jeopardize the start of his rookie year, does push him down a bit. I still have him in tier one in these receiver class. And you know, his comparison for me is Will Fuller coming out of Notre Dame. Yeah, he's this vertical threat. He wins down the football field, but he also has got a good body, can win at different levels of the field and really good after the catch. Like, I really do think Jameson Williams, he doesn't tear his ACL in that game. One, Bama might win the national championship, and Jameson Williams is a top 10 pick lock, like a legitimate lock. And I still think there's a chance he does go in the top 10. Like, I think his floor for me is the Chargers at 17. If he falls further than that, I'd be pretty stunned. Like, I do think a lot of teams are buying into him as the wide receiver one and would more often – I think a lot of teams would be 100% interested in him as a top 10 player, and he wouldn't be discussed as someone that's falling out of that if he didn't get hurt. I think the other receiver that I really like and the other tier one receiver I have is Chris Olave of Ohio State. I think he is not my wide receiver one and would be behind Williams and London if Williams didn't get hurt, just because he doesn't have anything after the catch, right? But you know, the comparison I have for him is Calvin Ridley. Calvin Ridley is not good after the catch, or was not good after the catch, but he won the vertical route tree, right? He wins the vertical route tree. He can separate down the field, and he can separate versus off coverage and man coverage, and it is rare. Like, I don't even think, I mean, it's close, but like Olave and what he does is so much better, in my opinion, than what Garrett Wilson does. I think he creates separation effortlessly. While a lot of Wilson's separation, it's there. A lot of that is forced dynamism, right? A lot of just like, not herky jerky, that's more negative than I want to be kind of framed as, but it's like, it's not with efficient feet, right? It's inefficient feet and foot fire and stuff that kind of puts people off their game. It's a lot of noise that kind of creates the separation, whereas Olave is just creating separation because he's not taking a false step. You know what I mean? And that, in my opinion, is something that I'm going to buy into at the next level.
Yeah, the Olave thing's a little weird. Like, I think there was people that had him as a wide receiver like two last year if he would have come out, and then he goes back to school and it's like really productive. And now all of a sudden it's like, are we sure he's a first round guy? And it's like, it's a worse class. I'm not sure why he's like all of a sudden getting undervalued. I know there is like, you know, I'm not saying he's going to be an all world number one receiver, but it is just a little odd that he's kind of getting put, you know, he gets like certain, some of these guys, and you know this very well, it's like, there's the draft, come full circle thing where guys get overhyped and then people kind of figure out a way to be negative about them. And then they come back on draft night and they get picked on where they're supposed to get picked. Last prospect I want to hit on, Derek Stingley Jr., you know, news comes out today, foot's fully healed. Obviously, the injury is a concern because of, like, you know, some guys, Kevin Durant's come back and been fine from Liz Frank, and the other guys, my brother, for example, had it in high school and it was fine. But there's also guys like the Santonio Holmes and people of that nature that just, they're never the same. They can't even compete, like, at that level. And I know that's the, obviously the hope with Stingley at 20 years old, he'll be fine. Like, if you're the Jets, this is my hypothetical, and I talked about this a little bit today. Like, if Stingley's falling 14, 15, 16, and you've gone edge or tackle and receiver, like, do you think it's worth packaging 35 and 38 to come up for a guy like Stingley, and all of a sudden you – or is it, like, it's just risky and, like, you kind of let the eggs – the whatever, the cards fall where they may?
I think it's a bit risky, especially in this class where I think there's more depth than there is, like, high-end talent. Now, there are situations where, like, if you're only moving, like, a fourth-round pick to go up, I think, you know, might as well go get your guy. I think with Stingley, I don't think it's likely that he gets past Minnesota and, like, the Eagles, right? Like, I think that middle of the – I think 16 feels like his floor a little bit, and I also think, like, Baltimore could have been – I mean, Stingley is good. Like, Stingley is very good, and I don't see – you know, teams that aren't going to buy into Stingley are not, I don't think it's going to be because of the injury as much as it is, like, you know, some of these conversations, yeah, it's the same with the Thibodeau stuff, dude. It's like, some people don't think he's an alpha and he's not a chirpy corner. And it's stuff that I think is, you know, I've tried to be candid about the conversations around prospects, specifically around off-field stuff, and, like, be as transparent as I possibly feel about it. I think, you know, when you look at these players and their off-field interests specifically, and their and or their on-field demeanor, right? There's these things that, you know, teams chase. They chase guys who eat, like, football leather and milk for their breakfast and don't do anything but football. And guys,
yeah, O-linemen that don't wear long sleeves in the cold, exactly, even though every normal human does it.
Nasty players, gritty players. And I think the reason for that is
you're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNADS.com. You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNADS.com. You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNADS.com. You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNADS.com.
You know, coaches, like, you know, a lot of these older coaches and coaches that have been in this league for a long time, like, chase that because it's familiarity and it feels more coachable, right? More coachable than someone who has their own cryptocurrency or is releasing NFTs or has other interests, right? It's more coachable. Now, I wouldn't say, you know, people who are prioritizing their brand or aren't super chirpy or aren't this alpha or aren't nasty as blockers, I wouldn't say that they're uncoachable. I would say that people don't know how to coach those guys yet, right? I think that's the problem. There's a lot of coaches that are unfit to coach players that maybe have a prioritization around their brand or have a, you know, don't prioritize, like, being a chirpy Jalen Ramsey type or an alpha type and stuff like that, or take care of their body and maybe aren't as willing to play through injuries like a tough, gritty guy as, like, others are. So I think a lot of that stuff is hard to read. I think I'd want to talk to more players and talk to more LSU coaches before, you know, talk to Stingley, talk to LSU coaches about that specifically before you're, like, forming opinions on that kind of thing. I think that's the reason, though, more so than even the injury stuff, that people are concerned with Stingley. And I think that ultimately he's going to land someone a really good player. I think he's the cornerback one in this class. I think he's scheme versatile, and he gets to 12, 14, 15, 16. That's a steal for any of those teams.
Yeah. It's just, it's funny. You look at that. I mean, you could argue I would not argue this because I feel there's a few other teams that are better, but that 2019 LSU team, like, they're one of the better, probably five or six college teams ever. And like, he was an 18-year-old kid and was clearly the best kid on that team. Like, that's Joe Burrow, that's Ja'Marr Chase, that's a million other guys that are dogs in the NFL. And he was the best player on that team, in my opinion, at least. Like, I've rarely ever seen a college corner look like that.
I'd go as far as to say we won't see another college corner ever do that. We won't see another 18-year-old in the SEC dominate like he did against the NFL caliber receivers he faced too. Like I'll say it again. We will not see that again. That was rare. That's rare tape. And to do that at 18 years old, fresh out of high school, two freshmen in the SEC on a championship team, that's insane. It's legitimately one of one.
It was good enough that we were literally talking about him still as a potential top 10 pick when he's either not been quite as good or been hurt for 2 years straight. And like, we're still like, I don't know. Like, that's pretty good. I want to hit on something that's, I would say, pretty much right in this little bit of a lull period where we talked a lot about some of these draft stories and things like that. The wide receiver market right now professionally is an absolute shit show, right? You have Devontae, you know, get traded and, you know, at almost approaching age 30. And then, you know, as much as we could say, that's not a lot of value at a receiver making $30 million approaching 30 to get a one and a two. The Packers could have done worse, I guess. Although, you know, well, that's it for another day. You got the Tyreek trade, obviously came out of nowhere. This is not hindsight or saltiness. I think there's probably a little bit more there that the Chiefs were not willing to pay a franchise guy like that out of nowhere. And it kind of just like, they're like, yeah, okay, here's, you know, it's essentially two twos. Now you've got DK, AJ Brown. I don't believe the Debo stuff. I've not heard any of that. That's from anything reputable. And then even Terry McLaurin today at the Redskins beat kind of talked a little bit about, you know, teams are monitoring his situation. Where do you stand with some of these guys and kind of what's happened to the market? And if you're a GM and I put, you know, Austin Gale all of a sudden to the GM of the Seahawks, like, how do you handle some of these situations? Because you could argue either way, like pay him and just move on, or, you know, get the draft picks, cheap asset, and kind of keep it moving.
Yeah. I think to speak more high level on the receiver situation in the NFL, I think it's teams recognizing that you need eliteness at that position to win. Like, to win deep in the postseason, you need multiple elite high-end talents at receiver or tight end, right? It's not an offensive line situation where you just need a lot of average to above average talent. You can't have weaknesses, right? It's not a weak link type of thing. You need really good separators, multiple separators, at the receiver position. Teams are going and paying for that now. And they're really, you know, receivers are realizing their value. The Tyreek Hill trade does not happen unless Devontae Adams is traded and made the highest paid receiver, right? He only voiced his concern, or his agent only voiced his concern around his contract after Devontae Adams signed that deal and Christian Kirk gets all this money. Like, that's what happened, right? Like, that's how the situation occurred. And receivers are smart, and the agencies are smart to recognize their value, right? Like, they are very important to the success of deep postseason competitive teams. Very important. Tyler Boyd, T. Higgins, Ja'Marr Chase, right? You think about the Chiefs with Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce in their heyday. And then people don't bring up this name enough in the Chiefs Super Bowl run. Sammy Watkins. Like, Sammy Watkins was very good for that team. Instrumental as that, like, third option in that offense. Way better than what Brian Pringle was. Way better than what Mecole Hardman has been for that Chiefs team. Look at the Rams. The Rams went and got Odell Beckham Jr. when Robert Woods wasn't already hurt, right? Like, they were like, no, we have Cooper Kupp and Robert Woods, and we're going to go get another guy because we know how important it is to have high-end, insane talents at the receiver position. So now I think teams are recognizing that. I think players are recognizing their value. In terms of what Seattle should do with DK Metcalf, it kind of depends on how they view their current roster situation. I think a lot of it also depends on what Pete Carroll wants to do. Pete Carroll is the oldest coach in the NFL, right? Is he going to be a part of a rookie quarterback rebuild situation where DK Metcalf is gone? So they move on from Lockett, right? Or and instead of Drew Locke starting, it's a rookie, it's Malik Willis, whoever it may be. Like, okay, is Carroll around for the next 2 to 3 years? Is he next around for the next 3 to 5 years? Do you want to do that to a rookie quarterback's development? Who's going to be there? I think those conversations have to be being had in Seattle, right? It's not an elephant in the room. It's obvious that Pete Carroll is not nearing retirement age. He's in retirement age for a lot of head coaches in the NFL. So I think the Seattle Seahawks are an interesting spot. I think if they had a younger coach and, you know, were in a position where, like, they felt really confident that they'd have this new guy coming in and a new system that was going to be in place for the next 3 to 5, I think they would move on from Metcalf and or Lockett and then start to really lock into a top quarterback prospect either in this year's class or next.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I almost think, like, Seattle, kind of fucked themselves, because in last year's QB class or this one coming up, you could argue like they would have been a great spot. Like, so Seattle was doing the same thing they do. They moved Metcalf and now they have Justin Fields or Mac Jones, and they have like a plethora of more of picks or something, right? Like, they're just in a really weird spot where it's not a QB class. I do not think it's a good QB class, like, at all. And I'm trying to sell myself on anybody right now of like, who's my QB one, right? Like, I've gone back and forth on it. So they're just in a bit of a weird spot. The AJ Brown stuff to me is like the one name that I'm having a hard time figuring out, like, in what world Tennessee would fit, like, move him, right? Like, yes, they're going to eat Julio money and they got Robert Woods. And I know their whole team's built around Henry. I mean, frankly, the Titans O-line is not quite as good as I think people thought it was. And they need to pretty seriously address that. I just don't know. AJ Brown's 24 years old, and like, what, I don't know that you're getting back more than what Tyreek brought you. And like, if you're the Titans, like, how much better is your roster with AJ Brown versus pick 35? Like, I mean, maybe it is, and maybe you get you get Zion Johnson falls and you get another guard and you feel good about it. But, and you know, they couldn't beat the Bengals with, you know, Julio and AJ Brown on the field and Derrick Henry. So I just, as much as it'd be really cool, I know him and Elijah are best friends, I'm just not at the point yet where I'm going to start saying like, that's a possibility. I think DK is the one guy that you look at, not on a contender, you know, probably has, you know, as much good value, although trying to get him to KG asking him about Drew Lock and his reaction was one of the funnier things I've seen on Twitter in quite a long time. I want to kind of get your opinion on a few names, or a few different things in the draft coming up. Obviously everyone always talks about the day one guys or the borderline day one guys. A few names that kind of stick out to me as guys that, you know, could potentially be Jets targets, but just guys in general. The Jets do need a second running back. I feel like Michael Carter's a really nice player, a nice piece, but you do need somebody to balance out with him. You looked at North Carolina State, him and Javonte were a really good pairing. Tyler Allgeier and Dameon Pierce are two names that I think are pretty consistently mocked to the Jets in that end of third round, beginning of fourth round range. Do you like both prospects? Not really. Or is like, are those guys the Jets should, you know, Jets fans should familiarize themselves with?
I like Pierce more than I like Tyler Allgeier. I think Pierce is more of a compliment to what Carter offers than what Allgeier is. I think Allgeier is, you know, the comp I have for him is like Jordan Howard. I think I see a lot of consistency, and his vision is solid, and he's a north-south runner that I think will have success, maybe even like starting ahead of Michael Carter. But Pierce is just like bowling ball of butcher knives, really good as a pass protector. I think a thumper style that Carter just doesn't have the meat to do, right? Like, I think Carter is an elusive back and a scat back type that does a lot of things in space, whereas you can put Dameon Pierce up the middle, right? You can do it in these, you know, short yardage situations. So I like Pierce over Allgeier in that sense. But I think there's a lot of areas that they could go, right? I mean, the running back class is not good. I don't think I take any of these guys, even my RB1, Kenneth Walker, ahead of like back in around three. Like, and that's with, you know, factoring in positional value, right? Like,
but I don't even think that's a good class regardless of that. Like, even if running backs were valuable, you'd still be like, eh.
I agree. And I think a lot of that's because I just don't buy a lot of the 40 times we saw at the combine. I don't think it's an overly athletic class. I don't think it's a big class, right? A lot of smaller guys. I think, you know, that's why. And also, you know, six running backs last year in the NFL played more than 60% of their team's offensive snaps, right? No one's drafting starters anyway. You're looking for complementary pieces to a backfield that's already in place. Do you need speed? You add speed guys. Do you need thumper? You add some of the bullies in this class. You don't necessarily, you're not going into this draft and looking for a guy you want to give 200, 250 carries. Those days are over. Like, no team is investing at that position to that clip outside of the Cowboys, which they regret that decision. Panthers, they probably regret that decision. Then you look at Najee Harris and the Steelers. So I'd argue they regret that decision. Giving Najee Harris and making him a first-round pick, and he played 81% of the team's offensive snaps last year. That is an absurd rate for a player that, you know, in a position, you know, is going to wear down. Like, that's, I don't know. I think the running back position is going to be continue to evolve in terms of how teams do it and how teams draft for it. Right. I think it's going to get to a point where so few of those guys are playing more than 60% of the team's offensive snaps that you're not ever looking at drafting a starter at that position. Right. You're looking to bring in guys that can play, you know, you're looking at more of like a 40-40-20 type of situation where you have two backs that are splitting the role and then a third back that comes in.
Yeah, it's interesting. I don't know how many people watch baseball anymore versus don't, but like, I kind of look at it as like a DH, where it's like, yeah, obviously it's really nice to have an amazing DH and like, that's great. But guys who can't play the field are already their values diminish in half. So like their rep, you know, their snap percentage, however, you know, if you want to phrase it to baseball term, but like there's so many guys that can still hit and it's like, or at least be like pretty good at hitting. So you're just like, it's just not the same as an everyday shortstop, right? Or like, you know, a amazing receiver that plays 98% of the snaps, like it's just more valuable than a running back at this point. It's not that running backs are bad or invaluable. It's just, it's different. And like, I don't, Pittsburgh investing in a running back last year made absolutely no sense when there was holes in the offensive line. You had a 75-year-old quarterback, but kind of a couple other quick guys here. Linebackers in position for the Jets, CJ Mosley. I know he did grade well from a PFF perspective. I thought the Jets, he was put in some situations with some guys that were his running mates that missed, you know, CJ Mosley was in the right spot. And I think he tried to overcompensate for some over aggressiveness from, you know, other star players, brothers. The Jets do need a guy to pair with him, especially in the scheme, run sideline to sideline. They played a lot of 4-2-5 last year. I assume they will do a lot of the same this year. Is there any linebackers day two or day three that you go, man, linebacker might, you know, on ball line, off ball linebacker might not be as valuable as some of these other positions, but if he's there at 38 or 69 or any of these picks, like I'd snag him in a second. I think he's gonna be a really good NFL player.
Absolutely. I think this is one of the best linebacker classes we've seen in a long time. I really like Leo Chanel, the Wisconsin off-ball linebacker. I think he's firmly a second-round player for me. Brian Asamoah of Oklahoma is another guy that I draft firmly in the second round and doesn't even get into some of the back end of the second, third-round type of players. Chad Muma, Troy Anderson of Montana State, Brandon Smith, Penn State, Darren Beaver, Cincinnati, Channing Tindall, Georgia, Quay Walker, Georgia. Like, this linebacker class is good. Like really good. And I think you can get a lot of, you speak to low value position, right? But if you're getting starters, like starting off ball linebackers in the pick 50 to 75 range, that is massive value. I see it very similar as interior defensive line, right? If you can get starters along the interior defensive line, like a Travis Jones of UConn in this 50 to 75 range, or even, there's a handful of other interior defensive linemen in this class that I like as well, like Neil Farrell, right? You get Neil Farrell like later in the draft, like late day three, early day, or late day two, early day three, like that's a huge one. Perrion Winfrey, Logan Hall, those are starters, right? You can go get starters in this class at those two positions specifically after the first round. Where I don't like linebacker value in this class is the first. I think Devin Lloyd's phenomenal, but am I taking a first? Am I spending a top 16 pick on him? Probably not, right? Just because
the days of Devin Lloyd and N'Kobe Dean Moss to the Jets at 10 can
die. I hope so. I mean, if I'm a Jets fan, that's one of the last players I'm rooting for, right? I think they're good players. I love N'Kobe Dean. I think they're really good players, but I think honestly, I'd rather attack a high value position.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know. If you, I will say this, and Mike, we do this every year where is this guy the next to this player, right? And Micah Parsons last year was terrible value where he was selected. Yeah. He became incredible value because he became an edge rusher and he started hitting the quarterback 15 times a game. I've said this from day one. We need to stop with the Micah Parsons stuff. Micah Parsons is a unicorn, and B, if he was still playing middle linebacker, we would not feel really good about that pick at 12. As good as he is, you'd be like, wow, the Cowboys definitely could have used offensive line help there. They could have taken Rashawn Slater. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I think we do this every year where who's the next this guy. And there's certain guys that are unicorns. Aaron Donald is a unicorn. You are not drafting interior defensive line in the top five anymore and like thinking it's going to work. Shout out Quinnen Williams. So
also like, I mean, I think there are certain players that you don't, I just don't think you should ever compare to. Like, I don't think Micah Parsons is not a comparable player. I don't think.
No, he's built in a lab.
Aaron Donald, Calvin Johnson, Julio Jones are not comparable players. You will not see me for the dawn of time probably ever compare another receiver to Julio Jones. Like that, you will not see similar frame athletic testing. Like you won't. I don't think you will. And if you do, it's going to be rare. It's going to be very rare.
Last two quick, two quick positions here. One, obviously San Diego State is goated. I'm not even joking when I say this. Should the Jets be in and like round 6 or 7 on our boy Matt Araiza, however you pronounce his name? Because Brad Mann was the worst punter in football last year.
I think anything punters, as big of a San Diego State fan I am, I don't think I'm drafting a punter until like the 6th or 7th. Guy this year, not maybe could go undrafted, is Ryan Stonehouse of Colorado State. Shorter than what people normally look for in a punter. And I think that's a big reason why he didn't get an invite to the combine. He's been kind of slept on in this class, but I think he's going to be a damn good punter in the NFL.
Elite name. And if the Jets can get somebody on WrestleMania, shout out Pat McAfee, incredible performance last night. The one last position I want to finish on, there is a really good, in my opinion at least, there's a really good group of safeties that are going to get drafted between like 27, 28, and like 40, right? You got Brisker, Hill, you know, obviously to name it two. Lewisine obviously is probably got the guy that'll go first after just a freakish combine. The Jets have, you know, LaMarcus Joyner there, who's probably kind of a stopgap year, you know, for this year guy. And Jordan Whitehead, I really like that signing. They still need a guy that can kind of play, you know, in that one high, but also kind of play multiple different, you know, different roles. Do you think the Jets should be all over safety, kind of that you know, early day two pick if they keep those picks? Like, those guys look like they could be good fits, the you know, the Hill, Brisker, Seen guys type names.
Yeah, I think so. Lewis Seen, I think, could be even a first-round player with how, like, it is a little bit scarce this year in terms of safety. I think all the good safeties are going to get picked, like, in second and third round. I think there's going to be a nice run on safeties. Lewis Seen, Georgia, Jaquan Brisker, Penn State, Kirby Joseph, Illinois. I really like Nick Cross, Maryland, and Brian Cook, Cincinnati. Those are other guys that I think round three, top of round four, people will really like. After that, it does drop off. Like, I'm not a huge Brad Hawkins guy from Michigan. I don't love Yusuf Corker, the Kentucky State. There's some guys I just don't really love in this class. Even like Sterling Weatherford of Miami, Ohio. Like, the athletic testing was good, but like, I don't think the tape is all that great.
Yeah, the tape doesn't say the same.
Exactly. I think there's, I have more faith in that group in the middle, right? After Hamilton being, you know, Seen, Brisker, Joseph, Cross, and Cook, that you get one of those guys in that day two, day three, you know, round two, round three range. I think you're going to be in a good place.
You know, I'm on the same page as you. It's interesting you mentioned Hamilton. I think there's a few guys that kind of, the combine did not do them any justice, the combine pro day stuff of guys that, like, I still would take Kyle Hamilton as he's going to be a really good player. And I think Treylon Burks has got a huge ceiling. But, man, I just when you get called unicorns and all these different things, some of the testing numbers become a lot more important than they would, you know, generally. I want talk, if you don't mind, talk a little bit about kind of what you have coming up here with this Hutch, you know, kind of podcast. Yeah. And I talked to you a lot of it in Indy. We caught up a lot about over beers, and I was it's actually really exciting stuff. So if you want to give everyone a little preview.
Yeah, we're really looking forward to it. In addition to Tailgate, which I host with Mike weekly, we're working on a 4-episode podcast series that will come out April 13th. And it's four episode podcast series where I sit down with, I think, Aiden Hutchinson and 50 other people regarding his story, right? His mom, his dad, his sisters, you know, former coaches, Harbaugh, Don Brown, Josh Gattis, a lot of former players, Quiddy Pay, Josh Uche, a lot of these other guys to like be a part of this project and talk about him, right? Talk about his story and his upbringing and, you know, his career at Michigan, the big injury in his junior season, and honestly just like really game by game of this like kind of insane 2021 season where he kind of goes off on a tear and enters the season as a guy coming off a big injury as a fringe first rounder, and, you know, and now finishing it up as, you know, the favorite to be the number one overall pick.
Yeah, no, I'm excited for it. I think he's somebody that I would put 99.9% he will not get past two if he does not go one, which I think he will, but if he does not, there's no way he's getting to four, unfortunately. It would have been he would have been a rock star in New York. There's no doubt about that, but it's obviously not going to happen. If we could all just stop with the JJ Watt comps because he's white, that would be really awesome. But I'm really excited, you know, for that to come out. Obviously, make sure you guys are kind of looking out for that again, April 13th. You know, Austin had a really cool tidbit in the Tailgate pod he hosts with Mike Renner. That's another incredible draft, pro, everything, ton of podcast about just the Michigan strength coaches and how they kind of measure all these different, you know, things of guys of hip flexibility and, you know, tibia length and, you know, shoulder broadness, all this stuff to like determine how good of an athlete. And I think you mentioned Aiden was like either one or one of the top three or four guys in the last like whatever years of Michigan. Wow. So make sure you guys are, you know, tuned into that. Again, I believe, April 13th, that is coming out. Make sure you're following Austin on socials. Got some really good, good quality content. Went a little viral on TikTok with some Gabriel Davis stuff. I'm back, you know, and PFF_AustinGale. And we appreciate you making a second appearance on the pod.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.